Tonight we have with us a very interesting guest by the name of Anna Marie Hemingway. And Anna Marie, you can find her at practicingconsciouslivinganddying.com. Kind of interesting topic for tonight. And so I want to welcome you to our show, and maybe what you could do is explain to our guest a little bit first before anything else about yourself and about your book, and then we'll just have a little bit of chit-chat talk. How's that?
Okay. Well, a potted history. I actually became very interested in the topic of conscious dying a few years ago, and that led me into researching things like near-death experiences and end-of-life visions, commonly known as deathbed visions, and after-death communication to a certain extent, because I found that it was very interesting to see how many people had actually had some kind of experience like that, either around the dying process or following it. And I certainly think that those kind of events give us the idea that there's something much more going on beyond the cessation of physical life when somebody dies.
Now, Anna Marie, where are you from?
I'm actually from England.
Uh-huh. And you're here in the United States right now, though, right?
And I'm in California right now.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Because I got, I'm listening to your accent there, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I should be calling you on a different line.
Because no.
Okay, but I'm good.
You're okay. Yeah.
I'm okay. You almost gave me a. I was almost ready to do my own deathbed confession right there. Okay. So, but deathbed visions. You said. Your whole book is it's broke down, as far as your chapters are concerned, it's broke down with a story from various people that have had that have shared their stories with you.
Yeah, they are. There's three sections, and the first is on near-death experiences, and the second is actually how sometimes going through the dying process with somebody and going through the grief process certainly actually ends up by opening us up perhaps to a whole different realization of life. And the third section is about people who have had after-death communications that has really changed their lives in some way. And with the stories, I actually try and give as much information about, you know, a near-death experience or a deathbed vision or an after-death communication, because certainly there's an awful lot of information out there, and I think it's one of the subjects that perhaps people don't always mention unless they have an open forum to. And collecting the stories was really in a way to show that, you know, an ordinary person like you or I or the person next door or down the road actually has these experiences, and they occur every day. And, you know, people sometimes are often shy, perhaps, about sharing that kind of an experience. And I think the more, you know, we bring out the fact that many, many people have these kind of experiences, you know, the more people are willing to talk about them and share their own stories. And I think they're very inspirational for everyone.
Well, how did you go about getting these stories?
Well, I think like anything else, I decided I wanted to, you know, write the book, and I found myself very engrossed in researching myself, and the stories just sort of came my way, as it were. I didn't really have to go out and look for them. Somebody would tell me of someone they knew, or I would hear about someone, or sometimes people actually got in touch with me, and they just sort of fell into my lap, really.
But you actually researched it out by interviewing these people?
Well, the research I did was really sort of historical research in a way. I wanted to really look into the whole idea of after-death communication, and you know, when we first kind of heard about that, you know, how long ago in history was the first kind of after-death communication. And I actually came across a quote in the Bible where King Saul himself was in touch with a medium, or had an experience with a medium. So that was very interesting. And when I came to near-death experiences, it had so much in common with the ancient Egyptian ideas of the afterlife, coming forth into the light and judgment. And it seemed very much as though, the actual messages and content of these experiences doesn't change very much from 3,000 years ago. And it was very interesting to see, that near-death experiences have been recorded. I think perhaps one of the earliest ones was in the 8th century, and Plato used a near-death experience in the Republic. So we see that, these things actually have a long history, and they're not just some, modern idea that's, just come into our consciousness. They've been around for a long time, and I think certainly in the 70s, there was a lot of interest generated when Raymond Moody first wrote a book and detailed and named this experience as a near-death experience. And certainly from then on, we've got a whole load more of information, but certainly it's not a new thing.
So I take it then that you don't believe in a real death.
Well, I think the physical body certainly does decay and die, but I think as human beings, obviously, we're very curious about this idea, because it's the only one thing that we know for certain that's going to happen to us. And in Western civilizations, we certainly do not embrace the subject. And so people often have a hard time coming to terms with their own mortality. And, certainly perhaps the only time we ever have to come in contact with the idea of death is when, suddenly perhaps somebody that we love or care about becomes ill or has an accident, and we're totally unprepared. But I think that, there is a curiosity beyond that fear, and certainly there seems to be enough information, out there in all sorts of different ways. For example, the near-death experience, or deathbed visions, after-death communications, mystical visions, transpersonal experiences, where we certainly are given an awful lot of hints that consciousness does survive bodily death.
And where do you think this consciousness goes?
Well, who knows? I mean, that's a mystery,
really. Based on the stories that you have heard, what is your theory?
Well, I think that, there's an energy or essence, however people want to term that, the soul, the spirit, or some form of consciousness within the human being that survives the death of the physical body. How that actually looks, we don't really know. I guess the nearest we actually get is from people who have had a near-death experience.
And what do they say?
Well, I guess, they merge into the divine light of supreme consciousness.
And this is what you're hearing from all of these people?
Well, yes, from the majority of them. I mean, some people do have an experience that perhaps, contains elements that it isn't quite as paradisical, if you like. But most of them actually go beyond that initial experience to complete the experience in a good way, and these people come back and they are no longer afraid of dying. So something of great magnitude has obviously taken place within them. They are, by all the tests that we can determine clinically, dead. So the out of body experience that's described, and the ability to perhaps even, you know, see what's going on when they're supposedly, you know, flatlined, there's certainly something there. And I think it's the same with deathbed visions. People actually see deceased relatives or friends, or perhaps they might see some kind of religious imagery. But certainly there's the idea with people that do have deathbed visions that they are being accompanied to another phase of existence. And perhaps one of the more interesting things about that is that people who, hospice workers often, or people that care or attending the dying, often actually share these experiences as well. So,
and how do they share it?
Well, they see the images too.
How so?
Well, if the dying person was seeing a deceased entity or relative, they may see that as well. So, you know, in the end it's a mystery and we don't know, but all of these things certainly point to the fact that perhaps there's more going on than we consciously know about in our day-to-day lives.
And your book is Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. They can find that at Practicing Conscious Living and Dying.com.
Yeah, the book's available through Amazon or any good bookstore or quite a lot of different internet sites. So it's quite easy to find.
And how long did you work on your book?
About 2.5 years, I guess, in total.
And how has this... what has this done for you?
I think it's strengthened my own convictions, perhaps, in the idea that, you know, the mystery of life is far deeper than perhaps we think. I think it, for me, very much was very interesting to see how, you know, none of these ideas are new ideas, and they're ideas that have been with humanity probably since the beginning of time, and that that message really changes very little. The Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Tibetan Book of the Dead, even the Bible to a certain extent, repeat a recurring message. And I think, you know, human beings actually perhaps translate that into whatever suits them, but when we take the actual basic message, it's very similar. And for most people, you know, the understanding that living life in a conscious way not only helps you live this life, but actually prepares you for what may lie beyond.
You say living life in a conscious way. Could you explain that, please?
Well, I think most people, when we talk about conscious living or conscious dying, the idea of conscious dying is not really so much to do with physical death in a way, but it's certainly to do with the death of this idea that the ego rules. And in the society that we live in now, you know, the ego really is of paramount importance to most people. The idea of me is often, you know, the most important thing. And certainly people who have had experiences or have experienced a near-death experience seem to have a very different idea about what living life is about in a conscious manner. And you know, the message that most of them bring back is the same, and is that life really is meant to be lived in context of the whole rather than the individual. And you know, sacrificing or dying to this idea that, you know, we are so important and all the things that, you know, we think about are important, these people seem to leave that idea behind. I think perhaps this idea of a life review has a lot to do with that, where people describe perhaps, you know, seeing their lives before them and sometimes aren't terribly happy with the results and have another opportunity to come back and have another go.
You know, Edgar Allan Casey, and I don't know the exact words that he used, but it's been kind of I've been thinking about it lately a lot. Something about in the end days that the grave will surrender the dead. And I've been thinking on that lately, you know, especially with the reference on your website with Larry Dolce, the author of Extraordinary Healing Power of Ordinary Things, and he referred to the science of the immortality mm-hmm. is in the making. And for some reason, I've been feeling that what Casey was getting at was that, and I've noticed this lately, that more and more people are hearing and seeing apparitions, of people, you know, that have crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be in the past that once a person was dead, as far as most people were concerned, they were dead. That was it. Now we have shows on ghost hunting, Paranormal State is another one, where they're actually coming up with various instruments to document people that have crossed over, where they're actually being able to, through EVPs, being able to actually tape conversations. And then, you know, with digital photography, we're able to photograph these various apparitions. And I'm thinking maybe this is what Casey was getting at, that this veil of some sort or something that had used to separate us is collapsing, and thus the grave is surrendering their dead, because death itself is the illusion. Because all a person does to get to the other dimension is to surrender its physical body, but the conscious being, the true being of a person, actually is just as much there as it always was, with the same memories, the same personalities, you know. And except the fact it's in an ethereal form instead of a physical form. And I'm wondering if this new science of immortality isn't going to show us my thoughts on this, that it's just a matter of how the molecules are actually structured from a physical into more of an ethereal type of body.
Well, it certainly could be. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's a mystery. We don't know. I mean, people have all sorts of theories.
It's a mystery right now, but how much longer will it be a mystery?
Well, I think that is the truth, you know, that more people are becoming interested and curious about the kind of subject matter. There's certainly a lot more research going on now into all kinds of paranormal states or phenomena, and I think one of the reasons perhaps is because often, you know, we have cyclical times in history when perhaps things aren't as rosy in life. People tend to perhaps become more inward and more interested in discovering, you know, a deeper reality. I mean, I know certainly in the Second World War that, for example, the rating or the sightings of, you know, ghosts or apparitions was at an all-time high, and people sort of thought the explanation for that was perhaps along the lines you were saying, that you know, the consciousness or the energy frequency was very high. So I know in England it was actually documented, you know, how many people were seeing their son in the room before they got the telegram, or, you know, having an intuitive hit that something had happened. And I think, you know, that's a very interesting thought to ponder, because when we have times of stress or, you know, as in that period, that also at the same time these other frequencies are coming through, perhaps more so than normal.
It's just for us to learn how to become more consciously aware of them trying to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me that they're very aware of us on this side, you know, where they're watching us, listening to us, feeling our pains, our anxieties, and then they try to communicate, but because we're not aware of them, because we've been told, you know, that they're dead, they're gone, that, you know, that anything that we may feel or hear or see is just our imagination, and thus we do not try to communicate with them. And if we do communicate with them and we don't really believe in that communication to the point where we actually pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that disconnect between the two worlds that I think hopefully will end soon. My husband we watched Paranormal State one time, and Paranormal State was, they had created this Frank's box. I don't know if you ever heard of it or not, but it's made with an AM radio, a transistor radio that you can get at Radio Shack. There's a certain model number you have to use, but my husband went and he figured out how to make one. So he went and picked up this transistor, and he opened the back of it and played around with the guts, you know, and kind of puts a couple wires together the way it was supposed to be. Put it back together, hooked it up to some speakers, and we went out into these, because we do like haunted wood tours here in Burlington. And so anyhow, we had a big group with us that night. We decided we'd take the Frank's box out with us. And a spirit came through, and there was a person in the back, you know, that was in the group, and the spirit that was talking gave his name, and then one of the guys in the back says, well, you know, he says, that was my brother's name that died here recently, and so I called him up, you know, where he was closer so he could hear what was being said, and then the guy says, well, you know, he says, to the voice, you know, that was coming through the speakers, you know, he says, well, who are you? And he says, I'm your brother. And he says, well, if you're my brother, he says, what's your last name? And sure enough, the voice that came through the speakers gave the last name. And he says, well, then, he says, okay, he says, what is your middle name? Well, I gave him this middle name. And then after that, I mean, they carried on a whole conversation all the way through the tour. I mean, the guy totally forgot about the tour, and all him and his wife were doing was communicating back and forth through this box that my husband had created, you know. And
wow.
So, I mean, you know, it does happen. I mean, you know, that, that there are devices now being made that you can actually speak with spirits, because what they call the Frank's box, they really do work. We've tried it various times, and have been very successful with it, you know, very successful, and it comes across very clear.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of time, you know, that it'll be contacting, to me anyhow, mm-hmm. contacting the other side will be like making a telephone call.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think an awful lot of people, do experience, certainly after a person has died, some kind of after-death communication, and it can often be quite subtle, and perhaps, you know, because they're not kind of really thinking about it, people might tend to even ignore, you know, like you said, think it's their imagination or things like that, but certainly people, when you actually talk to them and say, well, you know, did you have any kind of something that happened that you couldn't really rationally explain but really made you feel very much that that person's presence was still around, the answer is that many people say yes, they do.
Yeah, I have classes here. I don't do virtual classes, so if anybody listening, don't call and ask me to do it, because I don't. But here in my place of work, I do have classes where I teach self-empowerment, and I teach people how to be able to listen to spirit and be able to, you know, open themselves up for communication. And we had this, we've been very successful with it. This one lady that is in one of our classes, she, at this point, when she first started, she didn't have, she wasn't able to tap in at all. But now she sees people. Just like, you know, they're right there, you know, and she's getting, she's hearing people chattering around her all the time. So she was just able to tap into that whole world. You know, now she's the only problem she's having is a difficult time trying to tune out the chatter of one world, you know, so that she can focus on this world. Mm-hmm. You know, because she'll think that there's people, you know, where she's working talking, and she'll go up to them and say, well, what were you guys talking about? Well, we haven't been talking. Well, yeah, you guys, where were we? You've just been chattering away for the last hour. And they'll say, no, we've been busy doing our work, you know. And or she'll, you know, see people walking around and other people don't see them at all. So I think it's a matter of learning how to tune in to that frequency,
mm-hmm.
You know. And more people are accepting that, too. It used to be, you know, that people that they heard voices or something like that would have to be very careful about telling anybody that, because, I mean, you know, they'd be put in a straitjacket and,
well, exactly.
Loaded up with drugs and put into a padded room. You know, so a lot of people, if they saw things or heard voices, you know, they just kept it to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, that's the same with NDEs. You know, people have got forums now where they can, you know, discuss that kind of an experience with other people, whereas, you know, certainly a few years ago, people wouldn't have told somebody, and it kind of often makes it more difficult for them because, you know, they have no one to share the experience with, because, like you say, you know, they're worried about people just thinking that they've lost it or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, so I'm kind of thinking that what Edgar Casey's talking about the grave giving up the dead, I kind of think that maybe might be what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I've been thinking on that for, like I said, the last couple of days. I suppose one of the reasons for it is because I knew I was going to be doing the show with you, you know, but, you know. And thank you for understanding that I had to cancel the show last week. But, yeah, I had 400 stitches from what the dentist said.
That's a lot of stitches.
That was a lot of stitches in my mouth, yeah. But, yeah, I was in no shape whatsoever to even... I couldn't talk I tried. I thought, well, I'm going to give it a shot. And I got up, but I was hurting so bad that there was just no way I could do a show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But one of your more interesting stories, please.
Well, they were all interesting in their own right. But certainly, I think one of the NDE stories that was really quite interesting was that of Larry Hagman. Because I think he reflects, you know, the image that people think is going to bring them, you know, happiness in life, which is having lots of money, success, fame. But for him, he had a realization that that really didn't do it. And his own near-death-like experiences were the thing that actually, you know, made him realize that he'd found the missing piece, and that was, you know, the insights that he got, which were the same as other people's, which is there is no death, and, you know, we life carries on, and losing that fear of death. And I think, you know, one of the more interesting things, perhaps, besides scientific proof, is the fact that most of these people start living their lives in a different kind of way, and certainly he's an he's an example of somebody who, you know, became very involved in working for other people.
Larry Hagman, wasn't he the one that was killed in Arizona?
No, he was the one that used to be J.R. Ewing.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I think in a world that's very disconnected, you know, from the things that perhaps we're talking about, those kind of stories are very inspirational because, you know, we live in a culture where, you know, death is a taboo subject to be discussed, and we often ignore the dying and the bereaved, and, you know, the answer is that, you know, life must go on at all costs, even when that life perhaps isn't particularly, you know, a good one. And, you know, death is often viewed as the ultimate failure rather than part of a natural life cycle.
It's very difficult for people that lost their loved ones, though.
Oh, it's very difficult, extremely difficult. I mean, it was after losing my mother that I actually wrote the book because, you know, having gone through that whole process, losing someone is probably, you know, grief is one of the most, perhaps even, you know, the most difficult of the things that we have to face. But I also, you know, got glimpses of other things happening. You know, she had deathbed visions and things like that, and it actually kind of changed my perspective, not only about what was happening to her, but, you know, what about what was going on in the whole process. And I found that, you know, to be very comforting.
What's not comforting is hearing a doctor tell you, you know, don't pay attention to that, that's just the drugs. I wish that doctors would quit doing that. You know?
Well, I think that's the other thing, you know. That is not with not all doctors, because, you know, there are many that are very interested and, you know, take notice of the NDE. They have patients that describe these things happening, and they take it seriously. And I think, you know, that's a great step forward. So
I think that more doctors should be doing that because...
Yeah. Well, I think it's a gradual process, but certainly, you know, there are many people that are becoming interested in that whole area. And, you know, opening up the forum.
Now, there are quite a lot of forums now for people that have had NDEs and
yeah,
also...
Yeah, I think so. The International Association for Near-Death Studies, you know, is an international association. It has chapters in, you know, many states in the U.S. and other countries as well, where people can get together and, you know, they can discuss their own experiences and learn more, or people that perhaps haven't had that experience but want to know more about it can get information. And I think there are quite a lot of certainly internet sites that, you know, give information and post experiences, so that, you know, there's a lot of information out there for people that want to know more.
Now, I've done shows where people have told me that they have actually had a near-death experience to be able to come back and actually have powers that they didn't have prior to being able to see things in the future, or this. There was, like, particularly there was this one lady that I talked to. She was from Canada. And when she came back, she actually had X-ray vision. She could see into a person's body to see disease, mm-hmm. and be able to show where the disease was, you know, and have, you know, which would definitely help someone, you know, be able to, you know, get it taken care of before it got too serious.
Well, I think, again, you know, that's one of the after effects that's most commonly noted, is that people might have ESP, extrasensory perception, that they didn't have before. Some have healing abilities. And I think it's, again, you know, opening up to that channel to allow that kind of energy to come through. And for these people, whatever happens to them, you know, during their near-death experience, something seems to sort of click. And when they return to their everyday lives, they often, you know, realize that they have these abilities that perhaps they didn't have before. Or if they did have them before, because I think everybody does have that ability to some extent, it was certainly enhanced.
Do you think that it's got something to do with the wiring or something? The
well,
electrical wiring and the, you know, of the human body, some sort of a spark or something that occurs that enhances these abilities?
Researchers that think, you know, this idea of coming in contact with this, you know, supreme, magnificent light, of, you know, what some people do describe as supreme consciousness or a higher being, or however they may describe it, has, you know, some effect on them, that they've been into this energy field, and when they return, you know, yeah, they're slightly different in some way.
And folks, we're I really want to thank you for listening to our show tonight. This is Mary Sutherland with BUFO Radio, and we're speaking on the practice. This is Anna Marie Hemingway, and we're talking on her book, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. It's Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. We're speaking on after death and near death experiences. She wrote this book based on various stories that she has accumulated and put in a book form, and it was based on the fact that Anna Marie had lost her mother and wanted to know more about this process, which happens many times, you know, to us. We don't have that much of an interest in it until we actually have the personal experience. And then all of a sudden, you know, it because of it being personal, you know, we take it a lot more seriously and want to start understanding it more. And, of course, a lot of times that happens, too, when we get a little bit closer to the end of this physical age that we're in right now. But anyhow, this is, like I said, this is Mary Sutherland, BUFO Radio. And we want to thank Anna Marie for being here tonight with us. And again, Anna Marie, where can these people get this book?
It's available through Amazon or any of the other internet booksellers, and should be available through any good bookstore.
And it is out now.
Yes, it's out and available. And you can get more information about the book and the stories on my website, which is www.practicingconsciousliving.com.
Okay, and also I want to remind everyone that we have an event coming up in June 20th and 21st with we're having the Ancient Wisconsin Seminar and Archaeological Expedition. We have Frank Joseph and Peter Moon coming to Burlington. And this is going to be held at the Sci-Fi Cafe and Earth Mysteries Museum, located at 532 North Pine Street in Burlington. You can find more information on this at Living in the Light, MS, M for Mary, S for Sutherland, .com/Ancient Wisconsin. There's going to be seminars in the morning and then expeditions in the afternoon. This is also going to be taking place at during the summer solstice, so there's going to be midsummer night celebrations. So we're planning on having some pretty good times. So I want you to go on over to livinginthelightms.com/ancient Wisconsin. And again, that's going to be June 20th and 21st. So check it out, and I hope to see a lot of you here. And then don't forget, we also have our large conference, our Burlington Vortex conference in October. So I'll have a website up on that soon, letting everyone know who's all going to be there for that. But June 20th and 21st for that. Or June 20th and 21st, that's on a Saturday and Sunday, for that Ancient Wisconsin Seminar and Archaeological Expedition. And again, go on with some more stories, Anna Marie, if you want.
Well, like I said, the book's actually divided into three sections, and the first section is on near-death experiences, and does focus a lot on, you know, the impact that the experience has had on the person once they return to their everyday lives. And, you know, as I said before, perhaps that's one of the most interesting results of such an experience, is that these people, you know, are changed and do live their lives very differently. So there are several stories about NDEs. I think perhaps one in particular, which is the first story that I collected, which is called Ruben's Story, actually illustrates how, you know, a person who's had an NDE certainly can help and give guidance to people who are, you know, experiencing either the loss of somebody that, you know, a loved one, or is perhaps in that process themselves. And Ruben, after his experience, became a spiritual counselor and end-of-life counselor. And, you know, his story is very interesting. We were talking before about having new gifts after the experience, and Ruben had a heart attack when he had his near-death experience, and he was actually told that you know, if he didn't come back in 3 months and have bypass surgery and all sorts of things, he wouldn't survive. And he, and I'm not suggesting that anybody should do this, but he actually, you know, found a new mission as a spiritual counselor in that respect. And he didn't do those things, and he started to work 20 hours a day, sometimes with as many as 50 patients or clients, and feels that, you know, he made a miraculous recovery, really, without the need of drugs or surgical procedures, simply because he had a mission to fulfill. And he seemed to receive, you know, a healing of his own, you know, physical ailments, if you like, that had actually led him to have that experience in the first place.
Okay. All right. Well, we want to thank you very much for being on the show with us tonight, Anna Marie. And good luck with your book. For those in Burlington, we do have the book in our library, so stop on by and check it out. And also, you can buy the book again at Amazon and your local bookstores. And if it's not at the bookstore, then you can tell them that you want it, and I'm sure that they'll get it. Or if it, you can check out your libraries too. And again, if they don't have it, you just go to your library and say, "Hey, I want Practice Conscious Living and Dying by Anna Marie Hemingway," and I'm sure that they'll get the book for you. So it's a lot of ways to get that book. So it's a great book. I have it here. And I've read it, and I like it. And we want to again thank Anna Marie and wish her a lot of success with this book and many of the other books that she probably will be putting out in the future. Are you working on any other books yet? Or?
I am, actually. I'm working on a book which is about, I guess, mystical experiences of some kind or another. And that, you know, includes all the things that we were talking about and other things as well. And, you know, why they're important in our lives and how many people actually, again, have such experiences. So I hope that's going to be out fairly shortly.
Oh, wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, and again, we're speaking with the author, Anna Marie Hemingway, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. And again, don't forget June 20th and 21st here in Burlington, our Summer Solstice Celebrations and with our seminar and and expeditions that we'll be putting on. Peter Moon and Frank Joseph will be here. And you're listening to BUFO Radio. And this is Mary Sutherland. Tomorrow night's show will be with, Frank Joseph. So stop on over at burlingtonnews.net and click on our live stream and listen to Frank Joseph talk about the what we're going to be doing at in Burlington June 20th and 21st. And the expedition, what we plan on putting on ancient mounds and the ancient races of Wisconsin. So I'll see you or talk with you guys and tomorrow night. And thank you again, Anna Marie.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
Okay, and you'll be able to find this show on our live stream as well as our on-demand, which you will be able to find at burlingtonnews.net. And again, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.